Russia has approved a vaccine against the coronavirus, but there's a lot of skepticism around what they're doing. Here to discuss the race to produce a safe and effective vaccine is Dr. Florence Comite.
I'm Dr. Florence Comite, endocrinologist and founder of Comite Center for Precision Medicine and Health in New York City and San Francisco, actually Mountain View, which we opened up last month in July, and the personalized health app Quantium. You can find me on Instagram and social media at Comite Center. My bestseller, Keep It Up, is available on Amazon.
And let me just say, that's very exciting now that you are bi-coastal. Congratulations.
Thank you.
There is so much going on around vaccine production. How many vaccines are out there anyway?
Well, there's a lot of vaccines. I think in development, there's 165 and 30 of them are already in human trials. Two have actually been approved for limited use, including one from Russia that you alluded to, and it's named Sputnik V, which was approved, and there are air quotes here, by the nation's Ministry of Health. That approval has incurred quite a stir.
Boy, I'll say, why is the news of this causing such a stir, as you mentioned?
I think it's for a number of reasons. One is that the research integrity and the safety of the vaccine is in question. And that's because this vaccine was in what we call phase one of what is typically a multi-year process. It was only tested in 76 people, which by scientific and regulatory standards is quite premature. The concern is cutting corners could backfire and expose vulnerable groups to a virus. And that's how a vaccine actually works. There's a scientific and clinical concern about this type of vaccine itself, and that's called a virus vector vaccine. A virus vector vaccine uses the virus itself to deliver the coronavirus gene into a cell, and it provokes an immune response. So in effect, similar virus vector vaccines have shown to increase the likelihood of the transmission of the virus. So you're getting a small dose of the virus, and if they haven't cleared it and effectively shown that you're going to get a good immune response, you might actually have a response to the virus, and that could hurt people in the end.
Okay.
We've seen some of that with shingles. The first dose of shingles vaccine actually caused some shingles to occur in patients. So it's a similar concept.
Also, in talking about Russia in this calculation, there is a political undercurrent to all of this, isn't there, that a lot of people are worried about?
There is. I think, too, that there's a power race to be the first to find the cure. It almost reminds me of the race to the moon.
Right.
There's some concern that Trump may accelerate the approval process of a vaccine as a political move ahead of the November election. And I think we need to be wise to that. I think that the companies themselves will probably be very cautious. They need to be. They don't want to be responsible for bringing a process to fruition that isn't ready to be used in humans. And I think we're very cautious in this country to be aware that we want to save lives with the vaccine and not put lives at jeopardy.
But we are in a hurry, aren't we, to find a vaccine? Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. We really want to find a vaccine. We want to find a treatment that will free us up to go back to work, to allow children to go back to school. That's a really hot topic right now. And it's almost painful to see the debates over masks and over jobs and how people will get back to work if they need to homeschool children. It affects every single person at every level of society. And typically vaccines require years, if not decades, because it's almost impossible to know right away if a vaccine has worked, especially in a situation when folks are sheltering in place and not really encountering the virus in the wild, so to speak. And there is a process, and I've been lucky enough in my life to do testing myself using drugs and bringing them to market. So there are three stages for clinical testing, and phase one generally involves a few dozen volunteers, and you're looking to make sure there's safety and efficacy. Then you move into phase two. So first with phase one, you're testing that you're not going to hurt anybody most of all, and that it has the effect you want it to have. Then phase two expands to several hundred, while phase three moves on to thousands. And only then does the FDA review the data and the safety of the vaccine for approval. So So that makes sense. And we all, I think, understand that. But then time is also counted in there because you need to watch and wait what happens to everybody, right? You need to make sure that you're getting the response you need. Now, we're in a pandemic, and the pandemic is not much fun. And even though in the Northeast we've come through a pandemic, there was a mutation in the virus. It really cost us a lot of lives. Sadly, first responders died too, and many of them were not well under the surface, and that was one of the reasons. But we do need to flex the system because of that. We can't wait around years. So researchers have accelerated vaccine development by combining some of these phases and may receive emergency use authorization before getting formal approval. So I think the issue in Russia, to circle back to that, was how much of the process was seemingly skipped. And I also think the fact that they were willing to try it on family members of the political regime was also kind of promising.
Yes.
Because I don't think people would volunteer their family to try a vaccine process if they weren't pretty confident that it would work. So if we table the Russian vaccine, what is the status of our front runners?
You said we have, what, 30 in human trials now? Do we have any blockbusters that seem head and shoulders above the rest?
We actually do. We have currently three that are on, they're in the phase three groups, and they show promise. And I think that is something we all could look forward to. There is light at the end of the tunnel. So Moderna is a U.S. front runner, and they began testing in March, and they were given, I think, about $1 billion in support from the National Institutes of Health, which uses taxpayer dollars. Their final trial will enroll 30,000 healthy people across the country. The vaccine is unique because it's protein-based. It uses a protein fragment called messenger RNA to provoke an immune response in the body. Okay. So we want that immune response so we protect ourselves from the virus itself. If you recall biology, messenger RNA is produced from the DNA. So we get this messenger RNA and we should be protected to a degree. The second contender, and I'm not saying this in the order of what should come to fruition first, but these are, you know, what we are hopefully going to have in place sooner rather than later, is Oxford University. And they have pushed forward with a promising study in the UK with a company called AstraZeneca. And I believe they were granted $1.2 billion. I think they were looking for 5,000 volunteers, and I think they got 50,000 volunteering.
Oh.
Their vaccine is based on a technology that's amazing, right? 50,000
yes,
volunteers.
Yes.
That's how people raised their hand and said, use me. Their vaccine is based on a technology that creates a genetically modified version of the SARS virus, the COVID-19 virus, that doesn't cause the disease, but in and of itself, this triggers an immune response.
And I've also heard that Pfizer may be a contender.
It is. Pfizer is a U.S.-based company collaborating with a German company called BioNTech and a Chinese drug maker to develop a vaccine that uses mRNA like Moderna, so messenger RNA. They also have about 30,000 volunteers in their trial, and they're testing globally in U.S. and South America and Europe. And President Trump has contracted for 100 million doses by December. So I think there's some mileage there, and I think the promise is maybe we'd even see that by the end of the year or certainly by the new year.
I guess you sort of answered, how long will it be before we find the one? Will it be the end of the year, or are we looking at a year or two?
Well, look, I'm always optimistic, and I do think that because everybody is so anxious, I do think that these companies have pushed ahead. I think folks are going to be concerned when it comes through sooner rather than later, but I think there will be enough who will want it as soon as possible. So I'm going with the first quarter of the new year. I do think that the fear of flu meeting coronavirus is another huge concern. I think we are thinking that we can separate out. I know I myself know you can do testing, and we did it last winter in March and April. We were able to distinguish between people who had the flu and people who had COVID. We were lucky enough to be one of the first groups to test, and we were working in sync with Boston Heart, Dr. Ernie Schaefer, and we were able to test folks and differentiate if somebody did have the flu versus COVID, and we had appropriate tests, and we didn't have false negatives and false positives. So we were quite lucky. But the billion-dollar question, Pat, WHO has published a report detailing the prerequisites required to move forward with 8 strict conditions. Some researchers think the circumstances should allow for what's called challenge trials, where you actually expose individuals to the virus in a controlled setting, a bit like an N-of-1 trial, for example, what I do, where you're looking at individual response to understand broader scientific truths, as opposed to testing thousands of individuals to drill down to the individual, or what I think of as population medicine or conventional medicine. Whoever wins the race, I believe, will have to have precision and the individual in mind. And I will segue here, if you'll allow me.
Sure.
The addition of masks have added to the ability for us to see the virus spread in a slow and consistent way, because I think filtering small amounts of the virus, a lot of folks are getting subclinical infections. And we are finding more and more people who have antibodies but have not been symptomatic. Or if they've been symptomatic, it's been minimal, like maybe a little bit of fatigue, and they don't even know they were sick, and yet we're measuring antibodies in them. And so what I believe is happening is if you're wearing anything but the N95, you may be exposed to just enough of the virus to react to it with antibodies, and you're getting a little bit of a dose. Your body is seeing it, not unlike what some of the vaccines are going to do, and you're going to be protected to some degree. And that is very promising to me, because I believe we're going to get to a point where we might have herd immunity. And it's slowly beginning to build up, because I'm even seeing it as one clinician. And it's reminding me of an analogy in medicine in two different ways. One is what we do with people who have allergies, where you get allergy shots. You go to a doctor who does that, an immunologist or another sort of doctor, who gives you shots. And those shots have a little bit of what you're allergic to in it.
Right.
And over time, you build up immunity to it. And I think what the masks are doing, and I'm going to explain what kind of masks would be ideal to use, but what the masks are doing are filtering the virus in such a way that we're getting little bits of that virus, and individuals are seeing it and their body is reacting without getting symptoms. So I'm all in favor more than ever. And I started saying this on March 20th when I wrote up the piece that we shared with as many people as we could in our practice and beyond, to say, please wear masks. And this was before WHO or CDC was saying that. But I really do think the mask is not only saving lives, but it may be filtering the virus to such a degree that we are seeing the spread, an immune reaction, because we're getting asymptomatic disease with immune response.
I've been hearing that wearing these homemade masks that are thick enough that very little gets through, it's not an N95, but it's pretty darn good. So that might be the best of all possible worlds, right?
Yes, I agree. So let me tell you the kind of mask your listeners should hear about. They should focus on the surgical mask, the blue ones, and wear it around their nose. They should cover their mouth with it, and it should extend under their chin. Make sure they wear it with, there's a tightening piece that almost is like a twist tie that you get in the grocery store, but it's buried in the mask, and that's the piece that goes over the nose, so they tighten it. It doesn't completely protect against the virus, because the virus is tiny, and the only kind of mask that it doesn't penetrate is an N95, which is why the CDC and WHO asked us to utilize the N95 as a healthcare provider. My own perspective is slightly different. When you travel, if you choose to go by plane or you choose to go into a crowd and you feel you're at risk, use an N95 because you don't want to be exposed. And so I give them out to our patients, and I encourage people who are in a plane, even though a lot of the airlines do protect us, and there are airlines that I've flown like Delta and JetBlue that will seat you separate, but you still can't help being exposed. And even though the air and airlines are actually filtered. So the N95 should be used by more than healthcare providers. And I think the masks are out there. But if you're going to use the other masks when you're out and about, they will protect you. Now, the ones that won't are the ones that have big spaces. Bandanas are not that good. So if you're going to use a homemade mask, try to use ones that are cotton that do close around the nose and mouth. Do not wear it under the nose. That's not to do anything. Right. And the real reason for the mask is that we touch our face then all the time. It's very hard to stop that kind of behavior.
Yes.
So the mask right from the beginning to me were really important. And that is where I think we would be saving a lot of lives, and we might even get a tiny dose of the virus and get an immune response way before these vaccines. And I think testing and making sure we take our government, our state, our city up on the free testing they're providing, both for COVID and for the antibodies. So I'm hoping we get to move to the antibodies, because right now I think COVID testing, for example, is free in New York and New Jersey and maybe Connecticut. I'm not sure if the other states are providing it as well.
What do you think about goggles? Because we are have been hearing people get the virus through their eyes.
The data that I've read has been mixed on that, and most of it tilts towards who don't get it through the eyes. Now, I will say I think the jury's out, because the eyes do have mucous membranes, but not from what I've heard. It has to go through the respiratory membrane. So the nose and the mouth is really the worst of it, and I would not think the eyes. But, you know, the eyes are close to the nose and the mouth, so if you're not covering that, then maybe you could get into trouble. So I would say don't touch your eyes and keep your nose covered. And I think with the mask on, you probably are less likely to touch your eyes, maybe not the children and the babies, but adults are more aware of your face if you're wearing a mask. But here's another field that does show that this theory of the mask, not just to prevent the touching, but maybe to allow bits of the virus to get through, not unlike the vaccine perhaps, and allow a minor response, shows promise. Homeopathy uses that theory, for example, and I'm aware of research in ear infections. When children get frequent ear infections, they use that model to prevent frequent ear infections by exposing children to tiny amounts, very, very, very tiny amounts. Or allergens, when you use natural honey that is not pasteurized, and you then prevent allergies and reactions to bee stings by using, you know, natural honey that isn't pasteurized. And so I do think that the mask may be a solution, and that we should look at it for multiple reasons.
Do you think the regular old flu will further complicate our pandemic? And would you advise people to get the regular old flu shots that they used to always get this year, if they're even available? I guess they're available, right?
They will be. So it's a complex question, and I think I would drill it down to the N of one, meaning each individual should check in with their own physician. Yes, I think in general, the flu shot is an absolute good idea. You want to know that you're protected, and if you've gotten it before, certainly you want to know how well the coverage is, because it's not always 100%, and you should get it early so that you are protected. There are tests of the flu. You can get a quick, rapid test of the flu in most urgent care centers. So you should clear that up if you do start showing symptoms. Symptoms for COVID versus the flu are different. The one symptom for COVID that is almost what we call pathognomonic, meaning if you get that symptom, it's virtually 100% COVID, that is the loss of taste and smell, would be something that you would almost always think is COVID. Aches and pains, a nose that's dripping, fever could be either flu or COVID, most likely flu, but it could be COVID. So I do believe that people who are used to the flu shot should get it. Those folks who've never gotten the flu shot and are resistant to it might want to check in again with their clinician and physician, but the flu shot might be a good idea for this year, but not everybody is a fit for the shot. And I think they would need to think twice this year and perhaps tilt towards getting the flu shot. I would say that it is a good year to reconsider that positioning, just because they might feel a bit safer, particularly if they want to be out and about, because there will be some confusion around it. And they really, I can't state it strongly enough, please wear a mask. If you can stay protected, and many of us are tired of staying home, and many will be going back to work or having family, relatives, children out and about, wearing the mask when you're exposed. And even when you think you might be 6 feet away, 6 feet is not a magic number. It's 10 feet or 20 feet. And depending on the winds and the direction those winds are blowing, 6 feet is really not a magic distance. Yeah. I think it would behoove everybody to stick with those masks. a flu shot, yes, particularly if you've done it. And even if you haven't, rethink your position and talk to those clinicians you trust.